Mexico has gorgeous beaches, archaeological sites, great food, and everything a traveler could wish. So promoting it should be easy, right? Recent global media has driven our perception to an all-time low.
Should defer travel to 4 entire states and parts of 10 others.
Selling Mexico to skittish Americans will take more than putting parts of it back on a map.
So we had to redefine ourselves. We decided to keep our mouths shut and let the most important people do the talking for us, our visitors.
This is a promotional video produced by Publicis Mexico, a PR firm touting its Mexico Taxi project, a series of testimonials by real-life American tourists fresh off their planes from their Mexican vacations, talking to American cab drivers on American soil.
Where are you guys coming in from?
Cabo.
Oh. Do you guys feel, like, safe and everything down there?
That's one of our biggest meals.
Totally safe.
Right.
Yeah. The great thing about Cabo is everything's so easy, everyone's so friendly.
2011 apparently was a record year for Mexican tourism, yet attracting Americans still is a challenge, what with U.S. State Department warnings and whatnot.
The biggest change in the approach was not ask people here in Mexico, because you don't want to tell the truth to somebody if you're in his house.
Alfredo Alcuzira is Publicis Mexico's creative director.
If the house smells or isn't pretty or anything, you're not going to say it. It's rude to somebody to say, your house is not pretty, I'm not having a good time, to your face in your house. So we went to U.S. major airports to do interviews there. And the interviews were conducted by an actor who was posing as a cab driver.
Mexico's National Tourism Board offers plausible portraits of pleasing destinations, Los Cabos, Puerto Vallarta, Cancun. As we know, Juarez has some problems attracting tourists, but has its problems cast a shadow on places like Cancun?
Has there ever been a product or a place or anything that you have found as challenging as this?
Selling American cars on 2008. I don't want to say the brand, but... Yeah.
Why was it hard?
Because that was the year when the two big American brands went bankrupt, and also that side of the border, media was taking a party with them. Every day it was, oh, bad quality, bad cars, bad numbers, they're going to disappear.
Can I ask how you did it?
Now that I think about it, it was kind of a similar approach. The problem with the car and the brand was about perception, not about the car itself. So once we got the people inside the car, they were the ones who started talking good about it.
I'm assuming you don't want to say what car that was.
It was the Ford Focus.
Why does it seem less politically correct to disafford than a nation? Because it seems like it is. Listen to this astonishing episode of the BBC show Top Gear about cars. This one about a Mexican sports car.
Cars reflect national characteristics, don't they? So German cars are sort of very well built and ruthlessly efficient. Italian cars are a bit flamboyant and quick. Mexican cars just going to be a lazy, feckless, flatulent opulence. Leaning against a fence asleep, looking at a cactus with a blanket with a hole in the middle on as a coat.
After saucily likening Mexican cuisine to vomit, they end on a flourish.
I'm sorry, but just imagine waking up and remembering you're Mexican.
That'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant because you could just go straight back to sleep again. That's why we're not going to get any complaints about this, because the Mexican embassy, the ambassador's going to be sitting there with a remote control like this. They won't complain. It's fine.
Actually, he did. The BBC apologized. But such capering, carefree bigotry doesn't come from nowhere.
Even the fact that people have the idea to make that kind of a joke comes from information that they've received previously.
Jim Johnston, a Mexican citizen born in the U.S., blogs about Mexico City.
Because these guys probably have never been to Mexico, and yet there are still these image ideas that creep up and show up in jokes, in cartoons, in songs, and things like that. There have been a lot of cartoon images of Mexicans as thieves or as stupid laborers.
Ay, 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 ay. Oh, I am the Frito Bandito. Give me Fritos, corn chips, and I'll be your friend. The Frito Bandito, you must not offend.
It's a bit late for that.
A couple of years ago, there was an article in the New York Times.
Mexican blogger Jim Johnston.
It was a story about Mexico City, about a store that sells bulletproof clothing. And there was one sentence in it that said, I'm paraphrasing, if you walk up to somebody in Mexico City these days, if you go up and ask for directions, they're as likely to run away from you as they are to give you an answer. And it just didn't make any sense to me. It gave you this feeling that being on the streets of Mexico City, everyone was petrified. If you walked up to a stranger and asked them a question, they were going to run away from you. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. This is not at all true. And it would have gone into their brains in this sort of very subliminal, poisonous way and given people, I think, completely wrong idea of Mexico City. I mean, if that even happened once to the author of that article, I would have been surprised.
I think the relation among American and Mexicans is not deep.
Ricardo Garcia is the editor of Gente, a glossy magazine of style, culture, and politics.
Maybe because Americans don't have time or don't have the interest or don't try.
And how does it make you feel?
Bad, because if you have a neighbor that is very, how do you say?
Snobbish?
Snobbish. Snobbish and rich, and he doesn't say hello in the morning. How will you feel? You are sick. Your house is not very well, you know, has a lot of problems, and you live in the same neighborhood. And the people in front of you don't even say hello. How would you feel that about? It's painful, yes. And on the other hand, you have a lot of anger. Why doesn't he feel something for this? He lives here, you know?
Okay, so a funny thing happened to me the first day in Mexico City. We were walking down the street in advance of the demonstration. I was carrying my recording kit, and I saw a man with a hurdy-gurdy. So I pulled out the mic. Excuse the terrible mic noise. I wasn't wearing headphones and I hadn't set a level. And he starts playing this.
Not that song.
And I moan, oh no, not that. And our fixer, a Mexican scholar, journalist, and social media maven who helped plan our interview, said, what's the matter? That's a beautiful Mexican folk song, Cielito Lindo. But all I heard was the Frito Bandito. And I felt bad. I looked it up. It's a ranchero song, almost 150 years old, embraced and adapted in every region, and I Fritoed it. So then I started playing versions of it on iTunes, and now I really like it. We were lucky to have chosen this week to be in Mexico because so much was visible that is often obscured. It's a warm and gracious culture, but also formal and restrained, at least compared to Brooklyn. This week, however, much that is customarily left unsaid was ringing from the rafters. Mexico's media culture is giddy with connection fever, which is sparking across generations and political parties for the first time during a national election. The structure of media is being analyzed and criticized from every corner. And that's a self-reflective exercise on a national scale. Meanwhile, the fortresses of silence enclosing the states that are racked and wrecked by the cartels are eroding. It's happening at a terrible cost, but it's happening. Voices are being heard, if not yet heeded.
That's the show this week from Mexico. On the Media was produced by super producer Sara Abdurrahman with help from Jamie York, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, and Chris Neary. Our interns are Amy DePiro and Eliza Novick-Smith, and the show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were John Delore and Andrew Dunn.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Marianne McCune.
And thank you, Marianne McCune.
Thank you, Brooke.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.